This is the IBJ podcast for the week of May 11th, 2020, brought to you by the law firm Krieg DeVault. I'm Mason King. Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. Typically, we'd be headed right into the teeth of wedding season, but the coronavirus crisis instead has thrown the plans of hundreds of thousands of couples, not to mention the multi-billion dollar wedding industry, into absolute tumult. If we narrow our focus just to Indiana, we know that about 44,000 couples get married every year, and about 17,000 of them have weddings in March, April, May, or June. Many of them have been forced this year to make quick and heart-wrenching decisions about how to proceed. Do they want to keep the date, but drastically reduce their expectations for the service and reception? Do they want to postpone until later in the year and go through the drama of rescheduling all of the vendors and guests with no guarantee that we won't be in the middle of another wave of infections when the big day comes? Or do they want to push it all the way to 2021 and hope for the best? As it happens, we actually have some answers for these questions. A nationwide survey by the industry group The Wedding Report says about a bit less than half of the folks who had weddings scheduled between March and December of this year are sticking with their dates and whatever restrictions might be imposed. About 26%, and these mostly were folks with weddings set for April or May, postponed to later in 2020. Another 26% have pushed into next year, and about 5% she gave up and canceled altogether. So those are the numbers, but what about the people behind them and the giant industry that depends on folks getting married like clockwork? In this week's podcast, we have two interviews. The first is with one of the brides who decided to get married on the chosen date, which was May the 2nd, just last week, but with a service that was radically scaled down and a reception that has been delayed until the fall. The second is with an Indianapolis-based wedding planner who had 23 weddings on the books for 2020, but now spends a good portion of her time working on Plan B and even Plan C for some of her couples. And that sometimes means rebuilding the wedding from the ground up. So here's our first conversation with the newly married Anna Carrera, who had a special reason for sticking with May.
First off, Anna, my congratulations and blessing for you and your husband.
Thank you so much. We're very excited.
So you were married, am I right, Saturday, May 2nd?
Saturday, okay. May 2nd.
If I had crashed the wedding, which I know would have been incredibly unlikely, what would I have seen? What was it like?
Well, it was definitely not what we were expecting to have happen on May 2nd. What we ended up doing is since we couldn't be inside of our church building, we were outside of it, kind of in the front, this grassy area. We had rented an arch from Hobby Lobby that they, apparently Hobby Lobby is no longer in the arch rental business, and so they just gave it to us. So now we have an arch. But anyway, we had this nice arch, and it was my pastor, and then my now husband, which is funny to say, and myself. And then we had a handful of chairs on each side. My parents were there, Derek's parents were there, and then a handful of each of our siblings. The guest count was in the single digits. So, and we were blessed to have our photographer who said that he would still be happy to come out and take a few pictures of it.
Now, how is that different from what you guys had planned?
Oh my goodness. Well, we planned to have, 100, 125 of our closest friends to celebrate with us. So, we were planning to do the wedding inside the church and then to go have a reception separately in downtown Indianapolis. And so it was completely, completely different. Instead of a reception, we came back to my house and ordered pizza. So not quite what we were planning, but it was incredibly memorable just the same. And we're very blessed to be healthy. And that's kind of the main thing that we've been focusing on, that we're still very lucky among everything else.
So the wedding day was actually the one that you had set.
We had set the date. We only just got engaged in August. And so it was a little less than a year ago, but we did pick it on purpose because I have several friends who are in the process of getting married and deciding if they were going to get married. I had one friend who was going to get married the same exact day, and they moved it to next year. I had other people who moved it to different months. It was really important for us to do it on the day that we picked because that was the day that we liked, that we decided we'd made that commitment to ourselves and to each other. And so we wanted to still follow through on that if we could still be here or be there. And also Derek, my husband, and I are big month of May fans. We love the 500. We love IMS. And so when we picked the day, we said, we're going to start our favorite month of the year by getting married. And then, you know, we'll have our anniversary and then it's only going to go up from there. Right. So we really wanted to keep that. It just wouldn't be the same if we postponed it till, you know, July or to November or something. We really wanted that day so that we can always remember how special the month and that time of year is for us. So we'll always be able to celebrate the month of May with our anniversary, which we are so happy about.
When did it become obvious to you that things were going to need to radically change?
It was back in March. I remember it was a Sunday that we were starting to kind of hear that different states were doing different things. And so we kind of looked at each other and I said, we may have to make some changes. I don't remember exactly the date, but it was early in March on a Sunday. And then that next day, the Monday, was when the CDC came out with those guidelines about gatherings of, you know, 10 people or more. And our reception venue went ahead and let us know, hey, we are abiding by the CDC recommendations. And so you can't have the wedding likely the way that you wanted it to. So we kind of had an idea. And then when we heard from our reception venue, then it became a little more real that we were going to have to make some serious changes.
Was that hard to accept at first?
It was really hard. I mean, you plan, you know, we've only been planning this for a few months, but you know, as a woman, you know, you get excited about this as much as you've been. Your whole life has been leading up to this big, awesome, exciting day, and you realize it's completely not going to be that. And so I remember after talking to the reception folks, I called Derek and we kind of talked through some of the logistics and everything was fine. And then I hung up with him and I called my mom and I just started bawling. I was just crying. And I had such a hard time with it. Like, I don't even know why I was crying. I was like, I know we're going to still have a reception and stuff someday, but it's just, there's just so many unknowns in the world. And I think it was just kind of that unsettling feeling of things that you can't control and you just wish that you could. And I remember when Derek got home that night that we were really sad about it. And then, you know, kind of that next day started and said, okay, this isn't going to be what we want, but we're going to make the best of the situation. We are not going to like live our lives being sad about this, you know, what we wanted. We're just going to move forward and be grateful and enjoy what we have. And then know that, you know, we have postponed kind of the wedding weekend, if you will, for later in the year. And we still plan to celebrate that CDC providing, if that's okay.
Forgive me for being completely pragmatic. Did you save some money?
Not really. We may have spent a little extra money. I mean, we're saving money right now, but all of the money that we were going to spend, we're still going to spend. We're just going to do it in a few more months. So, and we, you know, we spent a little bit extra for the little, I mean, it was pizza. So I guess it didn't cost that much more, but, not really.
So you're delaying the big expense, basically.
Yes.
And so do you know when that's going to be?
We have looked at October. That's when we think that all of our stars may align and we can do our big wedding weekend that we were hoping for.
Do you have any advice for other couples who are kind of in the same bind right now? They scheduled a wedding for mid-2020 and now everything has been a shot to the wind.
It's so hard because, like I said, we made our decision that it was still important for us to get married. And I know other couples who, for them, they wanted to wait. And I think that no matter what you do, if it's the right thing for you and your partner, that it's the right thing. You just need to kind of go with your heart and to do what's best for you guys. And that's going to look different for everybody. But just know that the hard part is over. You found your person, and that is a lot to celebrate, especially, gosh, we've been quarantining together. And so, you know, you get to spend that much more time with your person. So that's good, right?
Is it?
You hope so. You hope so. You learn a lot about somebody when you're together all the time.
Oh, so. I mean, this would be the world's most bizarre honeymoon. Did you guys end up taking one, or is that coming later too?
We're planning to do a honeymoon later. We took one day off from work on Monday and just kind of hung out at home.
Well, great. Well, thank you for telling your story.
Great. Well, thank you so much. It was very nice to talk to you.
Well, great to talk to you. Thanks again.
All right. Well, my thanks to Anna and her husband, Derek. Before we dive into the next conversation, let's hear from our sponsor. This is the IBJ Podcast.
The IBJ Podcast is brought to you by Creek DeVault, a trusted and dynamic law firm representing a wide variety of local, regional, and national clients. Committed to each other and to every client, Creek DeVault prides itself on integrity, professionalism, respect, and excellence. Financial institutions, global manufacturers, national healthcare providers, and successful organizations of all sizes and market focus rely on Creek DeVault to create innovative and successful business solutions. Connect today at www.creekdevault.com.
All right, we're back with the IBJ Podcast. Our second interview this week is with Emily Ventura of Emily Ventura Designs. She typically plans weddings in the $40,000 to $100,000 or $120,000 range. She finds herself rearranging wedding plans for couples this spring, while her revenue stream, heavily dependent on bookings for next year, has slowed considerably.
So for our second conversation today, I'm joined by Emily Ventura, who's a wedding planner and owner of Indianapolis-based Emily Ventura Designs. Emily, thanks for joining us.
Yes, thanks for having me.
I think we talk a lot these days about the new normal, whatever the new normal is supposed to be. So let's say we take like a recent week, like this week, the first week in May. How is this week different from your same week last year?
Good question. So I think this week last year, I would have been prepping to have a wedding on the weekend, starting the like heyday of wedding season now that we're in May. So I would be prepping for the weekend, getting ready to go to rehearsal tomorrow, wrapping up like any final details. And instead, this week, I am talking to more brides about postponing their weddings to later this year and some to 2021.
In earlier conversation, you said to me that you sometimes feel like you've become a part-time lawyer. What did you mean by that?
A lot of contracts, lots of brides wanting to know about the force majeure clause, cancellation clauses, postponement clauses. Are they getting charged more money? I am not an expert in that field, so I kind of have them go to where they need to talk those kind of things out, or even with the venue or vendors themselves. But just so many questions up in the air with charges that maybe they didn't think they were going to get. So yeah, it's a lot of legal terms.
Yeah, you said force, was it force majeure?
Yeah, force majeure. I'm pretty naive. I don't know a lot about what it is. I think it's usually like our act of God statement that if there's an act of God that happens, you can get out of your contract. So, and it's all interpreted completely different by whoever is issuing the contract. So a lot of my couples are saying, hey, like maybe this venue wants to charge me money, but can I use this clause to not have to pay the money?
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Yeah. Let me walk back a little bit. I know you're a career changer. Is that fair to say?
Yes.
So when did you begin planning weddings?
In 2016. So I just hit my 4-year anniversary of being a full-time wedding planner.
And you graduated from IUPUI, I think in 2009.
Yep, that's correct.
With a degree in industrial organizational psychology.
Yep.
How does that jump work? to wedding planning.
So actually, when I got my major in industrial organizational psychology, I was working part-time at a bank, but I was focusing on statistics in college. So right out of college, I had a job with JP Morgan that I worked with for 4 years. So I was doing like a lot of finance and data analysis with them. I moved to a long-term care firm and did like data analysis for them for 2 years. Kind of had a passion for weddings for a little while, kind of explored and shadowed what that may look like, and then took the leap to go full time. I'm a very social person, and sitting behind a computer doing data analysis, even though I love that, just wasn't going to be a passion of mine forever.
Does the industrial organizational psychology degree help you at all right now?
I do. I think that at the end of the day, as much as I love my couples and everything that I do, I run a business. So I think the business principles that I learned in school, having those harder conversations, all come into play in just knowing that at the end of the day, I'm trying to put a roof over my head just like everybody else.
Now, was there an uh-oh moment in all of this? Like the first indication you had that things were going to be very different this wedding season?
Yeah, I think it was like right at the beginning of March when we went under our first stay at home order. I was watching TV. It was a Sunday night. I got the notification that we were going to be staying at home and things were going to be changing. I opened up my last bottle of wine that I had gotten from my Italy trip last year. Drank the bottle of wine with my husband, and I started making phone calls. I had two brides on my mind immediately. And so at 8 o'clock on a Sunday night, I called them and I said, we need to start talking now. And then the dominoes just kind of fell from there.
Was this in you making even more phone calls the next day and the next day, or did some of the couples start to call you?
No, I was trying to be pretty proactive with most of my couples and wanting to approach the situation with them first with options. I did have some brides that were reaching out to me that were much later in the year. At first, I was just trying to focus on any of the brides that fell within like that 8 week part of not being able to hold their event. And then quickly started realizing that later in the year, I was getting more brides with questions. And even today, I'm still having brides in like November, December contacting me.
So in those initial phone calls, what's the process for dealing with the bride and groom there? I mean, did you have to, I assume you had to kind of walk them through the decisions they had to make?
Yeah. So I think at first it's a lot of empathy, letting them know that it is a very hard decision. I'm sorry they even have to deal with this, but in order to have a safe and fun event, we need to be cautious. So then it's talking to them, okay, what are the new dates at the new venues? How far out are we going to push your wedding? Is it going to be later this year? Are we going to push to 2021? Then finding out if all the vendors are available that day. What are the fees associated? And then new contracts, canceling hotel blocks, having guests reschedule, new invitations, everything.
I mean, that's got to be overwhelming for the couple.
It's so overwhelming for the couple, and I just feel for them because here they have been counting down to the wedding day, and then all of a sudden it's like, nope, we're going to change your date on you, and now you have to count down to a new day. And some of the clients that have even postponed this year are now looking at postponing again to 2021.
Oh, so you've had to do like a plan B and a plan C.
Yeah, unfortunately.
How many weddings do you typically do in a year?
So I've scaled back a lot. So I'm trying to stay within just around 20 and managing all of them, you know, some of them double now because we're planning two weddings.
How many weddings did you have on the books for this year?
I think my team was like right at 23.
Okay.
And so far we've postponed 10.
What happened to the other 13?
They're still on the books for this year.
Oh, so some of them are at the end of the year.
Yep. So we just haven't gotten to that point of rescheduling them yet or having to reschedule them yet.
Is it fair to say that the weddings that do take place this summer and early fall are going to be smaller and more intimate than what the couples had originally planned?
I think smaller, more intimate, and I think a little bit unique since we still have to be socially distanced. So less people at table, tables being spread out, maybe not doing like a buffet or stations, moving it to a plated meal. Some venues are not allowing dancing, unless it's like bride and groom, father, daughter, mother, son kind of thing. So smaller and intimate and socially distanced.
That is fat. I did not think about that when I was trying to prepare some questions for this, is that you not only have planned for less people, but they like literally have to be farther apart. Is that something you're just kind of learning on the fly, or did your industrial psychology degree help you there as well?
It's kind of everything that we're learning on the fly. So when the new guidelines came out last Friday, I had automatically sent an email out to a set of venues that I knew I was going to be working at very soon and said, okay, what is this going to look like for their weddings that are still on the books? And then those businesses have been coming up with a more detailed guideline plan to communicate with me and the couple of what that might look like. Some are doing sign-ins, some are having guest sign waivers, some are requiring masks, some aren't. So,
oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Is that right? So you potentially could have a reception with everybody wearing masks.
Yeah.
And I assume, yeah, everybody has a different set of, or a different interpretation of what, you know, the CDC wants.
Oh, yes. It's very fair to say.
Has anybody canceled outright?
Not for me. Thank goodness. I have not had anyone cancel, but I know that people have.
So give folks a sense of what all needs to be rethought and rescheduled when you reschedule a wedding. You mentioned a few things, but I mean, how many vendors typically are involved?
It really depends on the wedding. I would say at least 10 to 15 on an average wedding, and then some more and some less depending on the scope of the event. So it's not only contacting every single one of those vendors and hoping that they're available. They're not finding a replacement. If the bride is, or if the couple is moving from summer to fall, do they want to change their colors? Are the flowers they were going to order, will they still be available? Do we need to switch that out? Do the colors of the bridesmaids' dresses still work? Transportation, logistics, are there conventions going on in the city that we weren't initially thinking about that would hold up hotel blocks?
Yeah, and that was one of the things that did occur to me is how do you plan for something in the future when you don't really know what that's going to look like? I mean, we could be in the middle of like a second wave when somebody had planned to have their backup wedding.
And I think that's what we're kind of learning right now with some of my couples that moved to July, thinking that we were going to kind of be out of the clear, and now having conversations with those clients. And I'm encouraging them to push to 2021 because we don't know what the fall will look like. We don't know what the end of the year, or how long we'll be like socially distanced for. And ideally those brides or couples just don't want those kinds of weddings. And I don't blame them.
You mentioned vendors. How easy has it been to deal with vendors who've had contracts for, you know, certain spaces and services at a particular day? Are some of them waiving fees or some of them charging fees?
Oh, this is a very heated topic in the industry right now. I would say most vendors, I would say 95% of the vendors I've been working with have been great. Easy to get a hold of, easy to move, easy for the client. Most are not charging a fee. I know for like me personally, I didn't have that in my contract initially, so I didn't feel like it was right to charge a fee. Some are. I understand why. Now that more weddings are getting pushed to 2021, I need to kind of start reconsidering that, because as these brides start to fill up our prime Saturdays in 2021 and we're not making any revenue off of that, it doesn't allow us to book any new clients, so we're not making any money.
I think you switched to talking about fees from a wedding planner.
Oh, sorry.
But that's actually, I did have that question too, just about, financially, you know, how does this affect the wedding planner?
Yeah, absolutely. So for me, if I'm taking a bride that was in 20 or a couple in 2020 and moving them to 2021 and not charging them a fee, I cannot book that Saturday prime date in 2021 because I've moved a client. So if I'm not charging an additional fee, I'm not making any revenue for the date next year and essentially not making any money at all.
So you had those conversations with couples already?
I have. I've had to. It's my livelihood. It's my business. It's a business decision. As much as I would love to work for them and not have to charge an additional fee, it is a lot of work and I need to also make money. Mm-hmm. It's my livelihood.
So at the same time that you are generally encouraging them to book for 2021 because it's probably in their best interest, you are saying, I am going to have to charge you extra for this.
Yeah. Now I personally have been a little bit, I would say, lenient with my policy, thinking if it's a Friday or a Sunday, I won't charge a fee. But if it's a Saturday date, I will have to charge a fee because that could just be another wedding that could have been a brand new client for me.
So it's really about taking a date off the schedule more than it is having to do the extra work.
Correct. Yep.
How has it been dealing with hotels? Because I mean, they're kind of they have their own set of problems right now.
Yeah, hotels are difficult just because most have furloughed most of their staff, if not temporary closed. So getting a hold of anyone at a hotel has been a little bit more difficult. Or you're dealing with someone that's probably managing like 3 to 4 of their employees' work while they're furloughed right now. So responses have been a little bit more delayed, but I understand that. My clients understand that. Unfortunately, it's very sad that a lot of the people in their industry have been furloughed, but hopefully everything will open back up soon and we'll get that rolling again.
Now, it looks now that like the state will allow, according to the most recent plan, large gatherings of up to 250 people by the middle of June, and then an unlimited number after July 4th. And that was just announced on Friday. Has that added an extra complication into deciding with couples what they want to do?
The only complication it's been adding is that those guidelines still have to be with social distancing. So that's what's difficult. There are some weddings that will have to scale back, but then they also have to be okay with whatever procedures the venues put into place for having their guests even walk in the door.
No, I would imagine too that then they would run into some problems with elder family members. What are they going to be more vulnerable and less amenable to that kind of change?
I think we're going to see a lot lower guest counts. But I've also seen a lot of companies now offering live streaming. So we can live stream the ceremony and maybe some of the reception formalities for those older family members that couldn't come to the wedding.
Oh, these would be the venues, for example, that could offer live streaming?
Usually like an external hired service, like maybe like a videographer or like a production team or something like that.
Are couples going to spend less on their weddings now?
I don't know. That's a good question. I so far, none of my clients have reduced their budget just from moving or postponing. I think the overall cost of paying less will just because we have less, like lower people, like less people coming to the wedding.
Yeah. I was wondering like what typically would get cut when you have to reschedule a wedding? I mean, you mentioned, for example, that, maybe the flowers they wanted are out of season now. They can't have, 300 people like they thought they would want to have.
Right.
So that maybe the reception would cost less.
Yeah. So overall, if we're reducing headcount, what that would look like is reduction in flowers because we maybe don't need as many centerpieces, less cake servings, less invitations that will go out or any like correspondence and day of stationery. Food and drink would be lower, late night snack. So anything that a guest would be a part of on the wedding day, taking that out.
Have you noticed a slowdown in people contacting you about 2021 and 2022 now?
Yes, it is almost non-existent. I have gotten a handful of inquiries from brides for September, August, and October of like this year that have had to move their wedding and maybe have realized they need a little bit of help, but I'm not taking on anymore because of just the busy fall schedule. But the 2021 inquiries for me personally have really kind of tapered off. I know that other vendor partners like hair and makeup and photographers and videographers have been busy. To me, those are super necessary for the wedding day. And right now, a wedding planner is more of a luxury item. We're not necessary, even though I think we are needed. So I think right now we'll probably be on the trail end of being contacted for 2021 weddings.
Oh, that's fascinating. So you kind of have to prepare yourself for having a pretty lean year next year.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I have not made income for the last couple months, and I don't know how much longer it will be before I start seeing income again.
When you say you haven't seen any income, why is that?
Just because no one's booking 2021 events. So normally spring and early summer is when I make majority of my income. because we just got out of engagement season with the holidays. And then everything COVID happened and everyone kind of pumped the brakes, or maybe they've lost their jobs or they are being laid off and can't pay for a wedding right now.
Do people pay in advance? Is that how that typically works?
Yeah, so I take a retainer. So I will take 50% up front, and then I take 50% 30 days before the wedding date.
I got you. So that's why you would be receiving income now.
Right.
Because
right.
When you book it, the client, you get 50% up front.
Correct.
So far, how has your revenue been different from last year?
Significantly lower. Significantly. But I'm hopeful that in the next couple months, we'll start to see the 2021 brides, hopefully, and I'll start making more money then. But no one's booking, no one's reaching out.
So really, you make revenue in 2020 for work you will do in 2021.
Correct. Yep.
Do you see a silver lining in any of this?
I think I'm seeing more couples focusing on their union and getting married and the love than maybe all like the nitty gritty details that they would have obsessed over for the last year and a half. I am all about a beautiful, personalized, heavy detailed wedding. But my clients, when I call them to talk to them about postponement, usually one of the first things they say is, we've been engaged and we just want to get married. We're okay doing a small elopement. We're okay just having us at a ceremony. And I think we're kind of bringing it back to what the core of the wedding day is, and that's the marriage.
For the weddings that you typically work on, what is like the range of budgets?
I would say my weddings anywhere between 40 and 50,000 to like 100 and 120. Yeah, I know it's a pretty big range, but it really all depends on headcount. So if I'm having like a 100-person wedding, it could be, you know, $50,000. But if I'm having 200 people of the same caliber wedding, I mean, that could easily bring the wedding up to like $75,000, $80,000, $90,000. So some on either end as outliers, but I would say majority of those are the ranges that I kind of work in.
You get paid really based on the work that you do. It's not like just a percentage of what the budget is.
Correct. I work on flat fees. So when they hire me and they pick their package, it's a flat fee.
Did you think that you were getting into a bulletproof industry?
No, I didn't. I think it would be naive to think that. Because I think anytime that you are a small business, you have to be prepared for the ups and downs. I never expected to go through a pandemic. This is a whole nother added layer that I didn't even think about. So I didn't think that it was a bulletproof industry, though a lot of people get married. But I did not expect this.
My thanks again to Anna Carrera and Emily Ventura. If you'd like to learn more about the tumult in the wedding industry, IBJ's Sam Quinn has a full story in this week's edition of IBJ. And there are a couple more stories I want to point out. As we begin tiptoeing back toward the office and other workplaces, John Russell examines the latest information on who is most vulnerable to COVID-19. That includes seniors and people with high blood pressure, diabetes, kidney disease, and other chronic conditions. Also in this week's issue, Lindsay Erdody profiles the five Democrats vying for Susan Brooks' seat in the 5th Congressional District. You'll recall that we profiled the Republicans last week. You can read these stories in the latest print edition of IBJ or online at ibj.com. Most of our coverage of the coronavirus crisis can be accessed for free on the website for all readers, and that includes our continuously updated digest of all the latest news. It's called The Latest, and you'll see it on the IBJ homepage. And remember, for unfettered access to all of IBJ's award-winning business content from today, yesterday, and the previous economic crisis, just hit the subscribe button. Well, thanks again for making time this week for the IBJ podcast. I'm Mason King. Hang in there, everybody. We'll be back again next week.